What is, in your entire career, the scariest story you've ever heard?
Well, George, I'm going to tell you a story now that changed my life forever. It's a scenario that no scriptwriter could duplicate because this one was for real. And this happened in San Pedro, California, right south of L.A. here in 1989. I was with Dr. Taff at the time. We got a call from a lady named Susan Castaneda. She was calling on behalf of her friend Jackie Hernandez. Jackie had just moved into a small little bungalow down there off of 11th Street. And there was there were strange things going on. She claimed that objects moved off shelves. A strange viscous liquid appeared on the walls. But the scariest thing, the two scariest things that occurred there, was she saw this desiccated-looking old man wearing high-water pants, a red flannel shirt, sitting cross-legged on the bunk bed in her children's bedroom. He would appear and stare at her for several minutes before disappearing. It was unusual. But, and then the other thing that happened was that one day she decided to check out her attic. Someone had found money in their attic, and she says, why don't you look up in your attic? Maybe there's something up there worth something. So she stood on top of this washing machine, put a milk crate up there, and looked in, and she said she saw a disembodied head floating towards her.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. Well, George, this all sounds like the stuff that motion pictures are made out of.
You got it.
You know, so we went down there. I mean, you know, I got to let people know, we are skeptical on every case until paranormal phenomena presents itself. I mean, and we thoroughly check out everything that happens before we would determine a paranormal, cause for that phenomena. But I was working with a fellow, but at the time he worked with me. His name was Jeff Wheatcraft. Very nice man. He actually was a still photographer at one point in New York, a fashion photographer. And before that, he was a school principal in Nebraska, and he quit that job because he wanted to get into a more glamorous profession, I guess you might say. But he eventually wound up here in Hollywood, and we'd worked on a movie together years ago over at Disney Studios, and we struck up a friendship. Well, anyway, Jeff was the supreme skeptic. He was there with me on this one night, August 8th, 1989. We went in and interviewed the woman, and she told us all these stories about the apparitions and, you know, the psychokinetic movement of objects and all these things that were going on. And when she told us the story about the attic, I thought that was intriguing. But when we walked in the house, I remember it was a very hot, sultry night, you know, very, very hot. And I really didn't want to hang out there too long because it was just because the heat was so bad. There was no air conditioning in the house. But before we left, and that was probably around 10 o'clock, I asked if we could go through the house. And so we did. We took a little tour of the house. And as we went back to the back of the house, I noticed sort of an overpressure in my head. You know that feeling you get when you're several fathoms below water?
Yep.
Get that little overpressure. That's sort of what I felt. But I didn't attribute that to anything paranormal at the time. I asked Jeff Wheatcraft if he would mind to take a few pictures up in the attic. Well, he didn't go all the way up into the attic. There was this little laundry room. And so we put the milk crate up there on top of that, and he was a tall guy, so he stood up on top of that, and we took the little trap door off, and he peered in there, and he took a few pictures. Well, he came down, and I said, "Did you see anything?" He says, "No." And I said, "Well, you look funny." I said, "There's, you know," he had kind of a quizzical look on his face. And he says, "You know, I didn't see anything, but," he says, "I felt like something was watching me, and it was like behind me." So another one of the gentlemen there, Larry Brooks, says, "Why don't you go up and take some pictures over your shoulder?" So he went up and, you know, kind of humorously laughed at that, but he went up anyway and was taking some pictures. And he was into his third frame. He had a 35-millimeter Canon, one of those bayonet mount lenses. And as he's squeezing off the third frame, George, suddenly the camera was jerked out of his hands. Jerked. I mean, just flew out of his hands. And he comes, you know, back down. He's shaking. You know, all the colors drained out of him. And we said, "What happened? What happened?" And he said, "Something just pulled the camera out of my hands." And I said, "You're serious?" And he said, "Yes." So, I had video equipment. I hadn't even brought it in. I had that, remember the 3/4-inch video?
Yeah, yeah.
It had a deck, you know, and the camera. I brought it in. I reached out and got the equipment. I said, "Let's go back up there and let's see what happened." So we went back up, and I had the camera rolling as I went into this attic. And it wasn't a very big attic. This was a very small house. But it was dark enough. I mean, it was big enough you could stand up in there, though. But as I say, I was rolling the camera as I went into the attic, and suddenly, only about a minute later, my camera was suddenly neutralized by something. You know, the power just kicked out of it. No explanation for that. But here's the interesting thing: the camera and the deck were powered separately by separate batteries. They both were out, but it wasn't the batteries. It was something else that was shutting us down, you know, molecularly, internally in the camera. Well, shortly after that, I mean, I was amazed by that, but shortly after that, Jeff found the body of his camera lying in this little box on the other side of the attic, and he found the lens port side up lying behind the trapdoor. He put the lens back on the camera. Camera was not damaged. Started clicking on pictures. Shortly after that, this pungent odor, it smelled like decaying flesh, started permeating the attic. At that point, I said, you know, I think I'm going to get out of here. And I started to go down to this opening. Jeff was above me, and I'm handing off the camera to the fellow down below. And I see Jeff's face contort in this horrifying contortion, you know, fear. I didn't know what had happened. He couldn't talk. And as he came down, I said, what happened? He said he felt a large bony hand pressing into his back. And, of course, he had massive internal bruising in his back, as we found out later. But as soon as we came down out of that attic, George, the camera equipment came back on. I started filming. We heard footsteps raking across the attic. Later on, Jeff just poked his head back up quickly and saw this large black mass moving back and forth. But this story gets even stranger and scarier. On the evening of September 4th, we get a call from Jackie Hernandez. All of it was recorded on tape. We started recording the phone calls at this point, trying to document this whole situation, you know. And we go down there. It's Jeff, Gary Baim. Gary Baim is an old friend of mine from Ohio. He was totally skeptical as well. Jeff was becoming a believer, I think, at that point, but wasn't sure yet. He wasn't sure what had happened the first night. We go down to this lady's house at about 1 o'clock in the morning. She called, and she was in a panic because she said some invisible force had held her down on the floor, and she couldn't move. You know, it's just an invisible force. She was suffocating her. She couldn't breathe either for a few minutes. And she said if it wasn't for the will of her children, she had a small baby and a young boy, 3. She said she doesn't know if she could have broken out of that. She suddenly just, her will, I guess, broke her out of that. She was able to get up and run outside and get some air. Well, anyway, she said things were happening. She said the door was opening and closing, slamming back and forth. Objects were being hurled at her. The children's toys were being levitated off the ground. We go down there, George. I'll never forget this night as long as I live. We go down there. Very quiet. No cold spots. You know, you hear about cold spots.
Yes.
And so, well, that did happen later on in this case, but not that night. No cold spots, no odors, nothing. Jeff and Gary decide they're going to go up in the attic. And they go up in the attic. I said, I think I'm going to stay down below tonight. You know, because I was still
don't blame you.
Nervous, George, about that first night.
Sure.
Up there. So they go up, and they're up there. You know, and Jeff is really trying to explain to Gary, look, here's where my camera was grabbed. Here's where I was pushed. He was telling him all these things. Again, very quiet. They're up there for about 20 minutes. I'm below this attic crawl space in this little laundry room. Jackie Hernandez, the lady who was the victim of this haunting, she was soon joined by one of her neighbors. Susan, again, came over. And I was just talking with them down below, not really thinking anything was going to happen because it was so quiet. And suddenly a little orb of light shot in front of me, a tear-shaped reddish color to it, and it went through a wall. But it was very quick, so I didn't really get a good look at it. And the two ladies saw it as well. And I got kind of alert. I had my camera there, and I got kind of alert. I still hadn't turned the camera on yet because, I wasn't sure what was going on.
Right.
And then shortly after that, George, just it wasn't long. I've never had this feeling before or since or even later on during this investigation, but I had this feeling out of my peripheral vision of being watched. There was a bathroom there right to my left, and I felt something watching me. But when I turned and looked, nothing. I didn't see anything visually. And then shortly after that, just within, you know, a few seconds after I had that feeling, we all three heard this snapping sound. It was just like three snaps of someone snapping their fingers three times. And I don't know, it was just like it's right there, no visible source for the sound. And suddenly I just get really alert. I turned the camera, hit the button on the camera, and suddenly we all hear this groan. Now, I had yelled up to the guys upstairs to come down, come down. You know, I feel like there's something going on down here. I was getting very, very nervous. And what happened was Gary was over the opening, and Jeff had just taken one step. He was back in the center part of the attic, and Gary used his flash camera and took a couple flash pictures as he went along, not to get pictures so much, but to see where Jeff was, because Jeff's flashlight hit the floor and it went out. And when he got over to the middle of the attic, George, he found Jeff hanging with an old weathered clothesline cord wrapped about 15, it was twisted about 15 times around his neck.
Oh my God.
So something unseen came out of the darkness of this attic and tried to strangle him to death.
Was he okay?
He was okay, but when Gary had to bend the nail that was protruding from this rafter beam, he had to bend it down to release Jeff, because Jeff's neck was really tight, and Jeff had bad burns in his neck from that, you know, rope burns from that. Jeff said that when he came to, by the way, he said when he took one step, he took that first step, he said something hit him in the neck, and he blacked out, like there was missing time. We were amazed just by how quickly that this happened, and by the way, when he was coming to, there was a sensation that something was pulling on his legs, like it was really trying to kill him.